Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Thursday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And hope you're having a wonderful end of your week. We've got a lot of news to get to because, well, hey, we could be heading into World War III if the world decides to come to Zelensky's response and provide NATO membership for Ukraine. They want a fast-track speed right now to get into NATO. And a number of NATO countries are saying, sure, let's do it. Let's give them the fast track. This, of course, is a red line for NATO. This is a red line for Vladimir Putin. What will happen as a result of this?
Plus, Pfizer has approved and rolled out a vaccine for RSV. Is it effective? Is it safe? We're going to show you their clinical trials, and you're going to decide for yourself. Hopefully, you can hear from my intonation where we're going with that.
And could NATO actually soon have a new leader? Could it be somebody from Spain, somebody you might know very well from the country of Spain? Yes, that's right. The prime minister could have Jens Stoltenberg's job as the head of NATO, all of that. And we're going to look at the future of doctors when they say, hey, I've got some practices and natural remedies and things that have been working for many, many years to treat you. Can we come to support those doctors? Can we come and make sure that we don't have a repeat of what we went through with COVID, where these doctors were silenced, they lost their jobs, they were banned from social media? A new group of doctors has come together to make sure that that never, ever happens again. We have all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, everybody. Hope you're having a wonderful Thursday. We've got a busy show for you, and we do have a daily newsletter.
That's right. I'm going to tell you all about it. It is a summary of a lot of the news that we do on this show, plus more, in fact, quite a bit more. If you go to redacted.inc and subscribe to the newsletter, it's totally free. It comes to you now through the summer. We're going to be doing it Monday through Thursday. We had been doing Monday through Friday. But when the kids come home and I try and write the newsletter with the kids home, it makes me crazy. And I have more spelling errors. So if you don't mind, please do subscribe. It is free. You'll get lots of fun news, plus all the links that we talk about so you can read things for yourself. Plus, there's a lot of fun stuff. Like, for instance, today there was a bear that broke into a bakery and ate all the cupcakes. Isn't that funny, honey? That's so funny.
No, the best part was when the people walked up to look at the bear and they ran away.
Yeah.
They got terrified.
It really was like a cartoon where they're just walking along and like, bear eating all the cupcakes. It's wonderful. It's like all of the stuff from this show, plus more feel good stuff. So please do subscribe to our free newsletter coming to you Monday through Thursday from now on.
All right. All right. Well, let's talk about your top story, which is what's going on in Ukraine and this fast-tracking NATO membership, plus some craziness in Mexico.
Right. So you may think, if you live in North America, that, oh, you know, these weapons, that's all happening over there. I'm all good and safe. Well, why now are Javelin missiles that the U.S. sent to Ukraine showing up in the hands of Mexican gangs?
That's a good
question. In North America.
That's a good question.
That is what the news in Mexico is reporting. I'm going to let you see just the top of this. And since I assume you don't speak Spanish, I'll speak over her. So go ahead and watch what this newscaster in Mexico says.
Asunto miembro del cártel del Golfo en Tamaulipas fue grabado portando una de las armas más exclusivas y poderosas, un Javelin. Que en teoría se vende únicamente al ejército
y ha sido... So what she's saying here is that the cartel has a javelin, at least one, the most exclusive and powerful weapon that you can find. She says that this cartel member here, see, they freeze it and they show you, yeah, this came from Ukraine, that it is now in the eastern state of Tamaulipas. And that weapon that can be found on the black market right now is worth between $20 and $60 million. She also reports that dozens of US AT-4 weapons that were made in Sweden, originally given away to Zelensky in Ukraine, have indeed shown up in Mexico. This is in the border town of Matamoros. Take a look here on the map and see just how close that is to the U.S. border. We were warned that the weapons that the West is sending to Ukraine were ending up in the black market. Now they are in the hands of the cartel right on the southern border. So do you still feel good about those weapons aid packages going all the way over there?
But like, think about that. There's no way they got that from overseas and then sent it back, right? So it's like, are they just like, they would have had probably got that before it was even shipped out. How is that possible?
Wait, what? How do you mean? Why can't they get it there from there to here?
It's still on this continent, meaning it didn't leave this continent and then come back. Like, how did they get it in just on the other side of Mexico? Meaning that there's some, like if these are getting shipped overseas, you would think that they follow them to the shipping yard. They follow them to where they go, and then they go overseas. It's all tracked somehow, at least to get over there. But they're having it right across the border.
No, like we that, know in my that mind, they're
that
not.
Doesn't make any sense.
We know right, that they're no, not know. Being tracked. We've known that for a long time. We've been saying that since at least last summer. We've been saying that.
But my point is, I just think that they would be tracked at least out of the U.S.
Well, some of them never were in the U.S. because a lot of times these weapons, for instance, the tanks, the United States either leases them or has some sort of intellectual property ownership of them. So the United States has given permission, for instance, the F-16, was it the F-16 fighter jets?
Mm-hmm.
One of the F-level fighter jets. Biden recently said that he was giving permission to NATO countries to send them. So the United States sort of ordains it, and then other countries send them. And we talked about recently how Spain and Portugal were like, we're not going to send those. We need them. So these weapons that she's talking about were made in Sweden and then gifted to Zelensky. But we've talked many times about how they are not tracked. And so they end up on the black market. You know, I would think that the cartel has an easy way to ship them because they a lot of times import their drugs in at seaports. I don't think it would be that much harder to get guns in. I mean, if you were to ask me how it's done, like if I wanted to smuggle these arms in, I'm the wrong person. I don't know how to do that. Do you know how to do that?
But I
am pretty sure that there are people who could do that fairly easily if you are a member of the cartel.
So people are questioning whether or not this is in fact a Javelin, and there's differing opinions of exactly what model number this is. By the TV station, specifically the Mexican TV station, identified it as a Raytheon-made FGM-148. It is believed to be a Javelin missile launcher. You know, and so I don't know where the distinction is, but, you know, we know that, of course, a lot of these have already been flooding into parts of Africa. They've been flooding into parts of the Middle East. Most of this stuff is winding up. We've shown you websites. We've shown you almost like eBay style black market websites where this stuff is being sold on the black market. Russia has gotten their hands on it. They've been able to buy the stuff on the black market and show that we have American weapons that are right here.
Mm-hmm.
The Wall Street Journal has admitted that most of these weapons they can't track and follow. So it's not a surprise at all. And some in the chat are even saying, wouldn't be surprised if we actually sent them directly to the cartel, which... That is something I hadn't thought of before.
But think about it. That kind of goes along with the narrative they've been talking. They've been floating it around. Lindsey Graham talked about it, invading Mexico. And if we can say, hey, they're stealing our weapons, now we have no choice but to invade.
Mm. Right.
But it's
not surprising if you have been following the narrative that Ukraine doesn't know what they're doing with this stuff. In fact, even today, the Wall Street Journal published this crazy video showing that, look at the headline, Ukraine might struggle to maintain these Abram tanks. They kind of compare this to like, well, you know how to drive, but you may not know how to drive like the latest model of something. You know, you'll eventually figure it out. I found this bit especially interesting from this editor at the Wall Street Journal. Listen in if your ears perk it, but at the same place mine did.
It's 2014. So they are not going to be starting from scratch learning how to drive a tank here. They will have to learn how to use the Abrams tanks. They'll have to learn how to use the targeting system. The Abrams is a four-person tank. The Soviet tanks have three people in them. So they'll have to learn details. But if you know how to drive a tank, you know how to drive a tank. So one way to think about this would be you go from a 10-year-old Toyota to a new Tesla. You know how to drive. You just have to learn how to do it on this new vehicle.
Okay. A tank's a tank, he says. We didn't have the sound on for the first part. What he says is they've been fighting the Russians since 2014. That's interesting because the Western media has pretended like this war broke out in March of 2022. So is this the first Western media's admission that Ukraine has been bombing ethnic Russians inside their own country since 2014? It's kind of a backwards way to say it, but okay. They present points about how the trucks that bring support to these tanks can't get through all the terrain. Like if it's muddy, the tank can get through, but the truck that brings the parts that support it can't. Like, is this a new problem? Doesn't everyone in war have this problem? You know, and they're presenting it as like a folly of Ukrainian military might. Like, they have these unique problems. Like, sorry, but I'm pretty sure that everyone in war has that problem. Like, if a tank breaks down, you need some kind of support to get to it, and it's hard for that support to get there, right? This to me doesn't seem new. Like, even I know I talk about the Mongols a lot because I read a book about the Mongols. These, like, the Mongols had ways to do this. Like, they had a lot, you know, like this. I don't know. There's a lot of sort of excuses being offered to the Ukrainian military, a lot of passes. And again, if your military is full of first timers, as many Ukrainians admit, they're not trained for this. They don't want to go and die on the front lines when this is their first military experience. And then people get hurt because they don't know what they're doing. That's what happens today. Take a look at this article from NBC News reporting that Russians killed civilians in Ukraine. See, it says here, Russian bombardment of Ukraine capital kills at least three people, including a child. But then take a look at this explanation. It says Ukrainian air defenses shot down all 10 cruise and ballistic missiles launched by the Kremlin, but falling debris caused damage and casualties, wounding six people and killing those three, according to authorities. So if all 10 missiles were shot down, Russia did not hit its target, and there is no assurance that they were targeting civilians then. It was Ukraine that shot them down into civilian areas, which we have seen them do many times before, like last week in Dnipro. And this is what happens when you send weapons into the hands of untrained forces. People get hurt and die. Now, meanwhile, Russia says that it has destroyed Ukraine's last warship. This is a Russian military leader who is saying this, and I just muted it because I assume you don't speak Russian. What he's saying is that they destroyed Ukraine's last warship, the Yuri Olenferenko, in the port of Odessa. They also claim to have pushed Ukrainian units out of two settlements in the Donetsk region. I'm not going to try and say the names of them. They're written there. And fighting continues in an area between those two settlements called Advidivka. He also mentions they're using these kind of, you know, flamethrower fighting. So it's really heated up there. These regions, again, I should remind you, voted to join Russia last fall, but Ukraine has continued to attack in order to keep them. And Ukraine launched more attacks inside of Russia, this time in the border town of Shebekino. And at least two people were hurt in the shelling that was reported to last for over an hour. Now, again, this follows a week of attacks on Russian civilians in Russian borders. And Russian President Putin has said he will retaliate, but he hasn't said exactly how. The U.S. sort of maintains that, yeah, we generally don't support attacking inside of Russia. We know it's happening. We're not for it. You know, it's kind of like the sports team across the bay. You know, we don't have much opinion about it. UK politicians say Kyiv should attack wherever it pleases. And a German spokesperson this week said that the attacks in Moscow are legitimate, as in, go ahead, fair game. And now to NATO, Zelensky is playing this game of, it's kind of, I'm going to say it in a crude way, like crap or get off the pot. You know that expression?
Yeah. And the way my dad used to say it. Yeah, it's, you know, we want fast track into NATO. And I think this is a smart play here on their part. I mean, because if the West is sort of hemming and hawing about sending weapons, he's putting them literally on notice right now to give us a fast track into NATO or be done with us.
Like, right. So what he's saying is that, this is according to the Financial Times, he's pressuring NATO to join, Ukraine, for Ukraine to have full membership, none of this dating anymore. Like, it's time to put a ring on it. And he says, if not, I'm not coming to your party in July, this NATO meeting that we have planned next month. I'm not going to come if I'm just like, you know, if I'm just your girlfriend. We want to be married, right? Here's what he said. Ukraine is ready to be in NATO. We are ready for when NATO is ready. We need all the unity through the alliance, and we are working on it. He says he needs a clear invitation to Ukraine is needed. Doubts must vanish. Positive decisions for Ukraine will be positive for everybody. There should be no hot war or frozen conflict on our continent. When there are no security guarantees, there are only war guarantees. So he's basically saying, look, we're in this war because we're not a full-blown part of NATO. You're not protecting us. You know, this is, again, it comes off like a girl trying to get her boyfriend to just commit already. Like, I'm done with this. And NATO has continuously said they don't want this because of corruption in Ukraine, which continues to be a problem. But now that there's this ultimatum, they do seem to be having their hands forced because they don't want him to go and negotiate peace.
I don't think that they're really against them joining NATO at all. I mean, Jens Stoltenberg has said openly that they're for it, and they reaffirmed that a few weeks ago. I think the EU is pointing out the corruption and, well, we're not really moving towards EU membership just yet. We'll hold off on that. NATO seems much more willing to want to poke the bear. But
well,
they've sort of paid lip service
to this all along and like, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
But again, you know, all member states have to vote for it. And there have been plenty of member states that are not in favor of this. So it could really fracture NATO as we know it.
Yeah. And as Colonel Douglas McGregor has said on our show, he really believes that this is the end of NATO, that this is going to be the death of NATO. And this idea that it's a, you know, it's a defensive organization is laughable, absolutely laughable at this point. When you extend NATO right up to the door of the Russian bear, you're not a defensive organization at all. That's not, not
I don't no. know,
go take it. You haven't been since the 1950s when you were founded.
In fact, last week I saw that NATO posted a tweet about gay pride and, you know, that kind of thing and saying like, we intend to, how did they put it? It was like, we stand for all identities and genders or something, and we will act to defend these things. Which, to which I wondered, like, oh, are we going to start bombing for ideology then? Because diversity bombs, that's fine, right? So this is what they're doing now. They're standing for ideological ways that
equity
the
bombs.
Whole world has to be. It's pretty interesting. Although I would say, if you call Zelensky's bluff, he's still going to show up in Western countries. He's still going to come to your party.
Yeah, do you think he's going to... If President Biden invites him to Washington, he's not going to show up now. He's just going
to rebuff. He's not going to come to NATO countries. He's no longer going to ask NATO countries for money. No, of course he's still going to be showing up.
But I think this is a ploy.
If he were alone in Kiev with no Western media interested in him.
This is a ploy. This is a smart move.
Right, so what I'm saying is call the bluff.
It's good cop, bad cop is what they're trying to do here.
Yes.
Right? And I think that it's probably... He doesn't move unless the puppet masters in Washington make him move, or the intelligence community in the intelligence staff in London make him move, right? So they're telling him what to say in this regard. They're telling him, hey, draw a line in the sand right now. Push NATO in this direction, and it'll force their hand, and then NATO will feel like they're compelled. We had no choice. We have to come to his defense. We have to fast track membership into NATO, which would be World War III if we're not already there. We absolutely are, but this would solidify that.
Yes. And then every NATO country has to now put their entire firepower behind Ukraine,
right,
which, you know, they have been loath to do, or at least slow to do. Now, meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron has proposed a peace summit, but he won't invite Russia. The peace plan, which was published a few months ago, involves Russia relinquishing the area it has already annexed, including Crimea. Once again, I think it's worth noting that these people asked Russia to intervene on their behalf because they were tired of being attacked by Ukraine, and since 2014, and then voted last autumn to join Russia. It is not for us in the West to tell them they need to then go back to Ukrainian borders. But that's what Emmanuel Macron feels very comfortable doing. And I think it's worth. Oh, yeah. Philip, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. So they're going to have a peace summit and they're not going to invite one half of the problem. Like, how does that work?
Yeah.
That is not a negotiation. I can't negotiate with you if I don't say anything. I can't just sit in my office and be like, no, remember, I negotiated that. And this is this is now the pay raise I'm getting. I know I didn't tell you, but that's okay. You know, like, how the hell do you do that?
It's theater. It's absolutely theater. But I think it's always worth looking at the map to figure out what is at stake here and just remind ourselves. This map here is the current war trajectory map from Financial Times. It still shows Crimea as contested, even though, you know, it's not really. And the areas that it shows in black, this outline here, those are the areas that voted to be a part of Russia, but Russia does not have military control of those regions yet. I don't feel like that's a very good representation. So I went to the Russian news outlet, RIA. So that is a little bit clearer, even though it's not in English. So again, this dark gray area. So the red is where Russia has military control. Crimea is just, in this map, part of Russia, uncontested, right? But the red is where they have gained since March of 2022. The gray is where they continue to push forward because they believe that those regions are ethnic Russians and voted to be a part of Russia. They consider it part of Russia. They just don't have military control right now. So in theory, the war would end when Russia hits those gray parts, when those gray parts turn red, which by all measure, it is moving towards doing. And maybe we're wrong. Maybe they'll keep going towards Poland. No one knows for sure, right? But the West is saying no peace talks until all of that red reverts to Ukraine. Russia is absolutely not going to do that. Again, because they believe those people voted. I believe, too, that those people voted to become a part of Russia. And it is not for the West to force them back into Ukraine. They didn't even want to be a part of Ukraine when Ukraine was rebuilt in 2014. And so if anyone was serious about peace, wouldn't they propose that the territory split according to the votes and people stop dying right now? Those are the new border lines and it ends. I know that's an overly simplistic way, but when you look at the map and you realize people are dying, Russians are pushing forward to that line where they say they will stop. Why don't we give them a chance, right? I mean, everybody would win. Ukraine would win because it keeps the territories that want to stay Ukrainian and people stop dying right now. Russia would win because those people that voted for membership are now protected. Bonus is they get access to those important mineral mines that are there that Kiev had been exploiting before. And the West wins because they stopped destroying their economy for a bloody and pointless war. So why is no Western leader seriously proposing this?
Because they don't want it. They absolutely want the destruction of Russia, and they are an absolute threat to the West. With the rise of Russia and the strength of the Russian and BRICS coalition and the strength of the Chinese-Russian coalition, this is an absolute threat to the U.S. dollar, and it's about U.S. dollar hegemony and Western hegemony. That's what it is. So they will not allow this to happen. They've called openly for the removal of Vladimir Putin and the destabilization of Russia. That's absolutely what they want. And they've gotten the opposite, as we talked about last night with Scott Ritter here on the show. The opposite has happened. Russia is now stronger than it's ever been as a result of this. So it's not going to happen.
It's because, yeah, neocons lose then if it, you know. But I just have to wonder when someone, you know, is interacting with you and they have a Ukrainian flag in their profile, I just have to wonder, do you want these areas that voted to be Russian and wanted to and asked Russia to intervene on their behalf, do you want to force them back into Ukraine? Is that what your Ukrainian flag means? I'm just very curious.
Yeah, or do you care about the Ukrainian people? Who are being thrown into the meat grinder, the 16-year-olds, the 15-year-olds that are being thrown into war, the 65-year-olds that are being thrown into the meat grinder now.
The men who have no military training and couldn't leave with their families.
Yeah,
and
because then
go to the front line.
To that, I would raise a Ukrainian flag and say, absolutely, we don't want those people to die. We don't want any of these people to die. So what does that mean then when you put up a Ukrainian flag profile? Like, you have some Ukrainian heritage, I get that. But if you have no connection whatsoever and you just want to virtue signal, what are you signaling?
Right.
It makes it.
Yeah, go ahead.
It just makes it really easy for them to keep throwing money because they have this poor Ukraine that needs our money. They need our help. But they know that people aren't going to vote for boots on the ground. If they try to put boots on the ground, people are like, no, we're not for that. But we're okay sending money. And it's like they're going to do all that. Then they're going to move to Taiwan and do the same thing. So it all just looks like a big money play. They're like, let's just dump as much money as we can as possible to get our war contractors happy, all these elites happy. Then we'll go to Taiwan and do it. And then we can still send money because people are going to be like, oh, we don't want to put boots on the ground, but we still got to support them. And we still got to support Taiwan and all that. So it just seems like money to me.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's the military industrial complex. It's the neoconservatives. It's the neocons. And it's the Democrats, too, who make boatloads of money off of these guys. I mean, who funnel and, you know, throw millions of dollars at their campaigns and put them in Washington so they can curry favor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so a lot of people agree that's not a javelin. People keep continuing to say it's not a javelin. There seems to be back and forth on whether or not it's an AT-4, the Swedish-made rocket, which is like the disposable, unguided rocket that we saw at the beginning of the report.
Maybe there's,
people are saying, oh, it could have just been an empty shell. It could have been an empty launcher. And to the point
I thought javelins came out of trucks. Like, I thought those were the ones that are on the back of the big trucks.
Those are shoulder fires.
It could also be lost in translation. She says javelin.
Javelin.
And
she says
maybe
javelin.
That means something else in Spanish.
But that's how what she said. So we're just saying what she said, and that's what that Mexican news station was reporting. But to our eagle-eyed observers and others, yes, it does look like an AT-4, the Swedish-made, unguided.
She later does say AT-4s. What she's pointing out here, maybe that's not.
So maybe in other video they've captured, there's javelins and AT-4s. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter. AT-4s, you know, comes from, you know, they're coming from the Ukrainian army surplus store, basically. It's like the overflow of Ukrainian arms. It doesn't matter if it's an AT-4. It doesn't matter if it's a javelin. It doesn't matter if it's coming out of there. It's coming flowing right into the hands of these individuals.
They have military grade weapons, period. Full stop.
Right. Yeah. And where are they getting them? Because we know where they're getting them. That's the bottom line and how these things are flowing all over the world. I mean, I've talked to sources. I've talked to excellent sources who've told me that these weapons are flowing into Africa, African nations, flowing to Latin America, and they're coming right out of Ukraine. And that is a fact. So we can parse words over.
I'm trying to remember. We reported on it a while back, but wasn't there like a cargo jet that came from Ukraine to Greece that was just full of weapons? Didn't we report something like that, or did I dream that?
Oh, yes.
I thought so.
Yeah, oh, yes. And that was a big story that actually got swept under the rug. We covered it here on the show. And that was actually a big story. Why was a cargo plane filled with weapons suddenly downed over Greece? Like, and it totally was ignored. And it was filled with weapons. That was a pretty big story, and we covered it here on the show, I think last summer, I think. But it got no coverage in the mainstream media, absolutely at all. And that was a big story.
All right. Well, thank you for your eagle-eyed weaponry expertise. I appreciate that.
Thanks to all of our javelin users. They're like, I've got javelins in the garage. Right. That is not a javelin.
Okay.
I was just out shooting a buck. I took down a bull earlier today.
So I do speak Spanish, and I just kept listening to her over and over again to make sure I had it right. And it is highly possible that the word she's using for this weapon is just something that I hadn't heard before. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, yeah,
we could take it as user error. I'll take that one and take it for what it's worth.
We've got more news to get to here on the show. Hey, Pfizer is back. Has Pfizer learned their lesson? And now in their new vaccine rollout, they're going to test it with thousands of people to make sure that it's safe and effective. Oh, boy. Wait till you hear what Pfizer is up to in their next round of vaccines. Also, the Prime Minister of Spain could be ready for a new job. You know, he keeps losing. He keeps losing as many elections as possible, regional and local elections. But he could be elevated. That's what happens to politicians. When they lose, they get new jobs. They get elevated. That's what the World Economic Forum wants. So could Pedro Sanchez, Prime Minister of Spain, become the new head of NATO? We'll have a full report on that. But let's talk about these vaccines now.
All right. Well, Big Pharma has paid Magic Johnson to tell you that RSV is a big problem, but don't worry because the FDA has now rolled out the first vaccine for RSV.
I make my health a priority, and I'm passionate about inspiring others to do the same. I've teamed up with GSK to help bring education and awareness around a common contagious virus called RSV. Understanding how to help protect yourself against this virus is important, especially for older adults who are at an increased risk for severe infection. My mission in life is to empower older adults to be their own health advocates by putting their health first. Know your risk to help sideline RSV.
All right, this commercial has already rolled out. Maybe you've seen it if you've been watching basketball games or things like that. Why do they need a big star to do this? You know, they didn't need a big star to tell us that COVID was a problem. We knew that, right? Because three vaccine makers are competing to release an RSV vaccine this year, which they estimate could make them between $15 and $17 billion per year. RSV is a respiratory virus. Moderna, Bavarian Nordic, and GlaxoSmithKline are working on their own RSV vaccines. And GlaxoSmithKline is the sponsor of the Magic Johnson ad. Now, the Pfizer vaccine that was just approved for use this week is only for adults age 60 and over, and they're working on a separate vaccine for pregnant women in order to protect babies from RSV. Now, this is something that I understand acutely because my daughter, Ava, here's a picture of her when she was 6 months old. She had RSV, and she was hospitalized for 4 days in 2012. Look how teeny she is, and that little oxygen monitor on her toe.
It was awful.
Yeah, it was awful. Get a little choked up about it. RSV is very serious for babies because it inflates their already tiny air passages, and so it can severely restrict their oxygen levels, and that's really dangerous. So had I known that I would have a baby that has RSV and that she would be hospitalized, would I have taken the vaccine when I was pregnant with her? Well, I don't know if I would have if I had seen this.
Later in the third trimester is when it seemed to have the best efficacy, as well as strongest protection up to 30 days versus after that. Now, Pfizer is competing with GlaxoSmithKline for RSV vaccines. We did note specifically that GSK actually dropped out or paused their phase 3 because of certain safety signals, which you can see, of course, indicated in those votes there, specifically on preterm births. Pfizer noted 5.6% in their vaccine group versus 4.7 placebo. GlaxoSmithKline noted 6.8% in their vaccine group versus 4.9 in placebo. So the placebo numbers are pretty close. They also do have some similar indications. One major difference is that GlaxoSmithKline's group also had neonatal deaths reported. So that was a significant safety signal as well. That's what started that pause. So,
okay. So she goes on to sort of excuse it, like, but they're still going to keep trying. So between 5 and 7% of preterm birth, which is bad for the baby, and a risk of neonatal deaths. So if I had it to do again, if I got the vaccine in my third trimester and risk death or risk my baby later coming down with RSV. Now, later she says that the best, or actually in the beginning of that clip, she says the best efficacy for this vaccine lasts 30 days. So you have to take it right before you give birth to help your baby, and it only helps for 30 days.
And your baby could die.
And you and your baby could die.
You and your baby could die.
So by this measure, it would not have helped our Ava Bean at 6 months with RSV, right?
No.
It only would have prevented her from having RSV as a newborn, which is not nothing, right? It's significant, they're not giving us data that newborns are dying in droves of RSV.
Right. That's my point. But also, how can they say that it in fact actually does prevent, like in 100% of the cases?
They can't say that because they haven't been able to test subsequently born babies, given that they're just putting it on the mom, right? So they need to be able to tell us that if the mom takes it, the baby has a lower chance of RSV. But babies don't contract RSV at high rates. When they do, it's serious. I know this firsthand, but they don't contract that at high rates in the first place. So how do they know, right? And again, given this risk of preterm birth, which is really bad for the baby, and also neonatal deaths, how can you then square those numbers? Well, let's look at how they squared the numbers for the vaccine that's on the market. The pregnancy one, not yet approved. It's being voted on, although in pre-votes, it was voted 14-0 yes. They're like, yeah, sure. Killed some moms. No big deal.
People in the chat are saying, did you take the RSV vaccine? The answer is no.
It was not available at the time.
It's now being available right now. And no, she didn't.
My daughter now is 11.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm saying at the time, she in 2012.
Imagine it's 2012, and the doctors come to you and they say, "Hey, we've got this new GlaxoSmithKline vaccine. You know, RSV is going around. Do you want to take this? You're about to give birth to your baby, and here are the side effects. It could kill you, and it can kill your baby. Do you want to take this?"
Right. For something that, you know, yes, there was an outbreak of RSV this year, but it generally does, it hits elderly people harder than it does small babies. And again, they would need to give me data showing that infants then exposed to RSV are less likely to get it. Well, how are you going to prove that? You're going to expose newborns to RSV and see, like, that's crazy, right?
Well, right.
I think we learned during this last stint of vaccines that, like, they don't have to show the stuff. They don't have to show data anymore.
Well,
it's almost like data doesn't matter.
Yes, but let's look at the data we do have about the vaccine that was approved today. This is the one that's approved mostly is for elderly people. So you have to be 60 to take it and above. It's called Arexv. Here's what your local news has to say about it.
People in studies only experienced mild side effects like pain at the injection site. Children are also at risk for RSV, but so far they're not included in the FDA vaccine approval. There is currently an antibody treatment in the works for kids. Back to you.
I just feel like
okay,
so.
Okay, that dress is so... a no, and what she just said is a lie. What?
When I saw that still image of her, I was like, what is she wearing?
It looks like she's wearing a parachute. So no to that dress and also no to that lie. 11 people died in that clinical trial. So what she's saying is false. It's demonstrably false.
Demonstrably
false. Maybe she did not read the clinical trials because the clinical trials are clear and I'm going to show them to you.
You don't think that the local Chicago news reporter that does the medical watch segments read all of the trial data and all of the information?
I don't know. That dress looks really hard to get into. That might have like,
I mean, obviously
been, she didn't iron
the hard hitting news report. Like I'd say she read it all.
Like, Monica, we need you to do something. No, I'm sitting here studying these trial data reports for the last 7 hours. I have not left my desk. This is important. And she hasn't read any of this stuff.
Yeah. What are you trying to say, Philip?
But I was going to say that sounds what Clayton's describing sounds dangerously close to journalism. And they don't do that there. That's
the medical
watch. That's not their bag.
She's on medical watch.
Okay. Incidentally, I commented on this YouTube video on that local channel's YouTube, and I linked to the vaccine trials, and I said, this is a lie. There were 11 deaths. Read this. Someone deleted that comment. Who do you think did it? I don't know. But we're going to look at the data because we're not lazy. Okay. So let's take a look. Pfizer is saying that the new RSV vaccine that was approved today has a 67% efficacy at preventing RSV. What they mean is 67% fewer people in the vaccine group contracted RSV than people in the placebo group. They do not mean to generalize this to the overall population. Well, they do, but you can't with these numbers. Now, if you look here at this chart, notice here that they have to administer 16,000 vaccines to prevent just 22 deaths. So see this group here, this first one, there's 11 in the first episode, then plus one, plus these next 10, plus one. So basically 22 deaths, okay, not deaths, I misspoke. 22 cases of RSV were prevented in 16,000 doses. Is that a good number? You decide. Now, interestingly, they ran this test with two doses of the vaccine given 1 year apart. They do find, here is a summary, that the neutralizing titers, which means the protection against the vaccine, wears off in the first year. So the first time you get it, you have this high level of protection. The second time you get it, you have much less, although it says more than you would have with no vaccine. So clearly they're setting this up as an annual vaccine that they want to give to elderly people. And they show that the protection is less good after the second vaccine. So will it decrease every year? Who knows? What we do know, this is interesting, is that they studied these people for at least a year to give them two vaccines 12 months apart. So then why, if they were following these people for at least a year, why do the adverse events that they report only track these people for 1 month? You saw them again, ask them what happened. You could have asked, but you don't find what you're not looking for. So take a look here at this table that shows adverse event data for 1 month only. 1 month. Right. And then what happened? Any lasting effects?
But they were following them for a year.
Well, we know that they saw them at least twice because they vaccinated them twice.
Right.
So they could have asked, like, hey, how'd you do with the first one? No, they don't want to know because, again, if you're not looking, you don't find. Right.
Well, maybe that's why the Chicago news reporter told us that the only adverse effects that they saw were just some pain in the localized spot where they got the shot. That's what she said.
Yes, she said that's what happened. But clearly in this chart, take a look. Let's look at these adverse events. Let's see. Serious ones, 103. Adverse events leading to death, 11. 11 deaths. Life-threatening, 24. Okay, so let's just add those two together, right? In 1 month of adverse events, we have 11 deaths and 24 life-threatening adverse events, meaning 35 people either died or almost died to prevent 22 cases of RSV. Does that ratio work out for you? Does that say full approval? Is that an awesome clinical trial?
No, and as Dr. Peter McCullough has said on our show repeatedly, the number of deaths associated with the trial would, like one or two, would literally stop it cold, would stop it cold in its tracks. So here you have 11 in a month.
Yeah.
11 in a month. This, and now we're approving this?
Right. And 24 life-threatening. So near-death experiences.
Okay.
Again, that's 34. Yeah, and go ahead, Philip. Yeah.
I just did the math real quick, but that's like where it says any event, that's 1,537 out of 16,000. That's a 9%, almost 10% of the people that took it then in that trial.
That's awful.
Am I understanding the numbers correct?
So you took that out of the sample size of 17,000?
Of 16,000.
Of 16,000.
Of 1,500.
Yeah. Right.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's 9.6%.
Yeah. So that's not great. You know, you decide for yourself whether you think that's a great number and you're going to go line up to get it because you can if you're 60 and over. Pfizer is trying to make the case, though, that you need it if you're someone who has a weakened immunity because RSV is dangerous and kills between 6 and 10,000 older adults per year. So they're saying you need this if you have a weakened immunity. But look at the Pfizer press release about this today. Adults with weakened immunity may have reduced immune response.
My God.
You need it, but it won't work on you. But it could kill you.
How do these criminals get away with this at this point? It's unbelievable that they can get away with this.
Because Clayton is $17 billion per year in Magic Johnson.
Well, I was going to say, you answered your own question there, why they need Magic Johnson to do the promotion for this. They need to spend millions of dollars in marketing this garbage to people, so that there's an elderly person sitting there saying, oh, I hear this RSV thing is bad. They're going to do constant, you know, commercial after commercial after commercial telling you that RSV will kill you.
Well, and yes. I don't watch TV anymore. Like, I've not watched TV for years, but I was in a motel this weekend in the evening, and I was watching HLN, which is Forensic Headliners. Files.
Oh.
And they were pitching this new HPV vaccine, and they were saying, you need to get your kids this HPV vaccine so that they don't get cancer as they get older. Like, they're just preying upon the fears of these worst diseases. But it's like, and then I saw one, oh, Philip, I told you about it, but it's like, it was almost all advertisements for pharmaceuticals. And it was, the one was like, it was a thing to make antidepressants less depressing.
Well, you remember when
I was like, what?
Do you remember when, what are the two royals, Meghan and Harry?
Okay.
Remember when that that Oprah special ran?
Yeah.
Prince Harry. And so all of the Brits never watch American television, but they watched that CBS Oprah interview with Harry and Meghan. It was their first big interview. So all these British people watched CBS for the first time in their lives in Britain. And they couldn't, and all of these memes popped up online the next day on Twitter because the Brits couldn't believe that they're like, wait a minute, Americans, this is your commercial breaks? Every commercial is for pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
And they don't have that. They don't have that in Europe. You don't see pharmaceutical ads on television. It's not, I think it's illegal, quite honestly, right? But you don't see them on television, like trying to get you to call your doctor, like, hey, Dr. John, I just was watching Matlock. And, you know, this shaky leg that I've got, I think I have what they just said I had on TV. Can you give me one of these shots? And that's how it works. And they end up making millions of dollars off of it, billions of dollars off of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's crazy.
Okay. Well, we linked to the trial data in today's newsletter, so you can read it for yourself. If you think that we are misinterpreting this data, please let us know how. But if you think this is an awesome clinical trial and you're going to line up for it, let us know that too.
And R Health, or R Heath, thank you for your super chat. Says that woman that we showed the reporter from that station has
the woman in the poofy dress.
He says she has no medical experience. I live in Chicago and she is a joke. I will write to WGN, the news station, about this, but they won't care. But I will do it anyway. Good for you. Yeah. It's unbelievable. But she's on the air saying no problem at all. Don't worry.
So
about
interestingly
it.
Enough, on that segment, you can find it yourself. Search the title. What is Arexne? A look at the new FDA-approved RSV vaccine. I wrote, this is a lie. 11 people died in these clinical trials. And I linked to it, and it was gone when I went back to it later. And then I reposted the comment without a link to the FDA clinical trials, and the comment is still there. So they probably blocked what was there to link to the clinical trials, but my comment's still there. Yeah, you should comment too. Let them know. In fact, I'm going to put it in the chat right now. Let them know that, you know, they're lying to you about this. They should read the clinical trials before they do a new segment about a vaccine.
Hey, we have a community here on Redacted. And if you'd like to support independent journalism and what we do here, we're not paid for by Pfizer or billionaires or anything. We are supported by you, the user. So if you would like to support independent journalism, come on over to redacted.inc and click the join button. You can join the locals community there. That's our private Redacted Rebel VIP community, where you can get access to exclusive content, live streams that we're doing to our community, and access to videos early before anyone else, and content that's just posted to that community. It's just a way for you to support the show, but it's also a way for us to provide some great content to you individually and for us to stay connected, because God knows we've been banned on these platforms. We've been banned on YouTube about 4 times now and blocked where we couldn't post anything because of our coverage of vaccines and other things. So anyway, if you'd like to join and support independent journalism, come over to redacted.inc is the website. Well, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez just got destroyed in regional and local elections in Spain. And that in political world means it's time for a new promotion, a new job. And it looks like NATO has its eyes on Pedro Sanchez, possibly for a job promotion. Redacted correspondent Dan Cohen has this story. Dan, so a job promotion after you lose all of these elections?
Yeah, I'm going to take the next couple weeks off and then see if I can just take your spot, Clayton.
That's right. That's how it works.
Apparently that's what's going on here in NATO. So NATO has reportedly already selected the prime minister of Spain, Pedro Sanchez, to replace Jens Stoltenberg as the next Secretary General of NATO. So here's a headline from the Spanish newspaper El Público saying as much. But NATO is, according to the reports, waiting to choose its next Secretary General until after Spain's general election, which is just a few months away. Spain just held regional and local elections that resulted in a dramatic victory for right-wing parties and crushing losses for the ruling center-left parties, including that of Sanchez. Now, right now, Spain is governed by a left-wing coalition of the Socialist Workers' Party of Spain, the PSOE, which Pedro Sanchez heads, and Unidas Podemos, the Together We Can party. Now, this map shows the results of the recent election. The blue represents the center-right Popular Party. The red represents Sanchez's PSOE party. And the Popular Party won in 7 of the 12 regions, including some of those that had previously supported the PSOE. But there actually may be no bigger winner than the Vox Party, which the Popular Party will almost certainly have to form a coalition with. Vox is an ultra-nationalist party that praises the Franco dictatorship that allied with Nazi Germany and ruled until 1975. And it's not exactly aligned with the Eurosceptic parties across Europe, but it does have some similarities. The biggest loser from these elections is the Unidas Podemos party, which was formed out of Spain's version of the Occupy movement. So overall, it's a huge victory for the right wing and a big loss for the left wing in Spain.
And it seems like this is a rebuke of these positions of supporting. I mean, it's amazing, right? On the one hand, you're supporting NATO, you're supporting this sort of globalist agenda, and you lose the elections locally in your country, but then NATO steps in and says, we're going to swoop you up as a potential new employee because of your loyalty to this globalist cause, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. The locals in Spain rejected this movement, and yet he's getting promoted.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not only Pedro Sanchez, but basically the entire Spanish political spectrum, all of the parties that have any bit of power, including the right-wing parties that just won, are actually totally in bed with NATO. So here's Pedro Sanchez with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, and here's the parliament giving a standing ovation to Zelensky, just like they did here in Washington. There was only one deputy from Podemos who did not applaud, though did still stand up. But overall, you can see how tight all the parties from the Spanish political arena are, all pro-NATO, neoliberals, globalists, call them what you will. And this isn't only in Spain. Remember what happened with the Finnish Prime Minister, Sanna Marin, mm-hmm. the World Economic Forum young leader? Well, she was real tight with Zelensky, went to Brussels, went to Kiev, and now she's out. She lost her election. You have the German Social Democratic Party. They met with Zelensky and lost big in local elections earlier this year. So Zelensky kind of exemplifies the whole imperial machine, and he is giving the kiss of death to these political parties. But again, in Spain, the right-wing parties, the Popular Party, which supported and sent Spanish troops to Iraq for George Bush, they are pro-NATO and pro-Ukraine, and so is Vox, the far-right party, the ultra-nationalist party. They're also pro-NATO. So I think they kind of function as the opposable thumb of the Atlanticist globalist system. And again, there's just no alternative in Spain. Pedro Sanchez, the current prime minister, who's, you know, may end up becoming the head of NATO, he just called for snap elections. Apparently, he's hoping to scare the Spanish public into voting for his party again. It actually worked in 2019 when Vox kind of really emerged onto the scene. And it's the same strategy that Democrats in the U.S. use. You know, you have to vote Democrat to stop fascism and the evil Trump, but I don't know how many times that's going to work when there's no real fundamental difference in the economics and the political programs of these parties. There are some aesthetic differences, but fundamentally not so different. So if Sanchez and his party fail again in these snap elections or the upcoming general election, looks like he's, like you said, going to get kicked upstairs to a nice position as the head of NATO.
Do we know what the margin of loss is for him? I mean, is it pretty substantial across the country? The amount of Spanish people are saying, you know, we're done with this. We don't want to be a part of this globalist ideology. We don't want to be a part of this globalist agenda. Is it overwhelming, or is it by a squeaky margin?
I think I don't know exactly what the numbers are in terms of margins, how comfortably the right-wing parties won. But I mean, the key thing is there are a handful, I think three regions that have long been kind of strongholds of Sanchez's party, of the PSOE. And those went to the Partido Popular. Mm-hmm. And there's also this kind of center-right party. And then there's also a huge swell of support for Vox. So even if people, end up getting going back to the other party that's just as pro-NATO, there's obvious discontent with the party that has promised so much and has really, you know, done nothing. I mean, I would say less than done nothing, has actually gone along with the entire U.S. NATO agenda, has cut itself off from not only Russian gas, but also from gas in Algeria, where it gets quite a bit of it. So because Algeria is, you know, pro-Russia. So Spain, the political leadership has really just put average people, the masses, in an incredibly terrible position with, of course, inflation and everything else.
Well, and we're seeing this rebuke coming from the likes of Italy, right? In that most recent election, we see the protests every day on the streets of Paris and across France, not just, of course, for pension and retirement age, but also anti-NATO protests. We're seeing it in Germany as well. Of course, this doesn't get any media coverage, but now Germany is now officially in a recession. As of last week, Germany is in a recession, and consumers can't afford anything. They can't afford to go out to dinner. That was specifically why Germany went into a recession on consumer spending. They don't have the money. And so you're seeing what has happened to Europe at large. And you're seeing it's not just Italy. It's not just Germany. It's Europe-wide. These sanctions against Russia, this kowtowing to the United States and NATO. And one wonders if we're starting to see a real change in NATO, in Europe, this awareness that, hey, we should not be under the boot of the United States any longer.
Yeah, I think there's definitely more questioning when we look at the case of someone like Ruben Hisbert, who we interviewed here, redacted a month ago, who's being prosecuted. He's there are charges against him for raising questions about what the U.S. What Spain's relationship to the U.S. and to Brussels is. And there's clearly more and more skepticism. But in my mind, the question is, will that sort of crystallize? Will that become a political party, a political faction, or will that just stay in the margins? But either way, Pedro Sanchez, I guess, you know, he's going to do really well no matter what.
he'll be elevated to it. I wonder how, we'll get you out of here on this, Dan, which is, you know, Jens Stoltenberg, of course, has moved to expand NATO, been actively involved in the expansion of NATO into Finland, et cetera. And of course, over the past few days, Ukraine has moved to want to fast track their membership into NATO. It'll be really interesting to see. Obviously, as you mentioned, they welcome Zelensky into their parliament, in the Spanish parliament. Will this be an open door, sort of an accelerated process for Ukraine to become part of NATO? It'll be interesting to see how he, if he gets this job, how he would lead NATO. What might change in the NATO hemisphere? Any sort of speculation as to how NATO might be different under his leadership?
I mean, I think he's more of a yes man kind of figure. He's gone along with everything that the U.S. has wanted. He's even couched his latest statements as, you don't want a Bolsonaro type figure to be able to be with Biden, or a Trump figure. So he's primarily concerned about Spain's relationship with the United States and maintaining that kind of ironclad relationship with Washington. And obviously that's what he and the elites that surround him benefit from. So I think he's just going to be taking orders from Washington and the course of NATO expanding eastward, threatening World War III, putting us on the brink of nuclear annihilation and human extinction, is just going to go on. And Pedro Sanchez, if he ends up as the Secretary General of NATO, will be just a figurehead.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Jens Stoltenberg out, possibly Pedro Sanchez in. Dan Cohen from Washington, thank you so much for this story. Interesting.
Thank you.
And let us know in Spain, if you're watching right now, what do you guys think about this? Pedro Sanchez leading NATO. It'd be interesting to see. Let us know in the comments what you guys think about that. All right, we've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about a couple of big things relating to doctors. There's a big launch today from the Global Health Group, which has launched a new set of television ads, really saying, hey, all of these doctors who were marginalized, they were blocked, they were banned during COVID, they came forward, they said, we noticed something's fishy here. We're calling this out. We're speaking out about this, and we were banned, we were blocked. This new campaign is launching called Never Again. As the WHO gets ready to launch their next pandemic, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation getting ready to launch their next pandemic. And we're going to speak with Dr. Kat Lindley, who is a part of this group, in just a moment. We're going to speak to her, but we're going to do that over on Rumble.
Okay.
We're going to do that on Rumble because, you know, we love Rumble and it's a free speech platform and some of the things we're going to talk about. You know how it goes on YouTube.
Oh,
you know yes. how it goes. You know how it goes. You know how it goes. So we are going over. We're live right now on Rumble. Good to see all of our Rumblers over there. But if you'd like to join us, that's where we'll be. Our stream will continue unabated, unaffected.
Right. And if you're not coming with us, I don't know why. What else do you have to do? But if you're not, we will see you here on Monday.
That's right. But yes, so YouTube, we have to say goodbye because of, you know, censorship on that platform. But we will be over on Rumble right now. So our stream will continue. So we'd love to have all of those YouTubers that would want to join us. It's totally up to you. Come on over and say hi.
Somebody just said, what's Natalie mad about? This is my nice face.
That's her resting nice face.
I'm being nice.
This is my resting nice face. I smile all the time.
No, you don't.
Can't stop me from smiling. You cannot stop me from smiling.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Can't stop, won't stop. All right, bye, YouTube. And hello, Rumble. Nice to see all of our Rumblers tonight. Nice to see you guys. Welcome over, welcome over, welcome over. Hey, we have, while we're waiting for everyone to get settled and get a hot beverage before we interview Dr. Kat Lindley, we have a store I want to tell you about. Our redacted store. It's at redactedstore.com. That's the website. You can get your redacted merch. You can get a mug, you can get a t-shirt, you can get a hoodie, you can get a hat, you can get a water bottle, whatever you like. But it supports what we do here on our show. We keep the costs right, like literally right near at cost, like what it costs to print these things. And just a little bit of profit for our show here to keep the lights on and to do what we do. So we do not mark these up at all. The cost of production to have them, we try to keep the prices very, very low for you. And hey, Father's Day's coming up. Wouldn't Dad love a redacted hat? I know I would. That's my favorite hat, the gray one right there in the center. That's the one I wear all the time. David, you have the red brimmed one, right? I think with the black.
Yeah, I like, yep. I have that, and then I have the trucker cap too. I love the trucker caps that have the vented in the back.
Oh, I have to get one of those.
Yeah.
The trucker cap. I'll have to pick one of those up. I like those too. And I like that black one there on the left too. And the mugs and the hoodies and all of it. Anyway, just go over to redactedstore.com if you'd like to support the show. And the merch is really nice. The hoodies are really comfortable. The t-shirts are well made. All and the hats are very nice as well. So check them all out at redactedstore.com. Well, today is the day a massive group of international doctors and medical experts have come together and rolled out a new advertisement called Never Again. The ad specifically asks the question, why are so many doctors having second thoughts about COVID? It's a great question. Watch this clip from this powerful ad.
My name is Dr. Elizabeth LaFay, and I'm a doctor of osteopathy.
My name is Stephen Clayman. I'm a doctor of chiropractic.
Hi, my name is Timothy Stonecipher, and I'm an osteopathic family physician.
My name is Molly Rutherford, and I'm a family doctor who also treats addiction.
My name is Michael Turner, and I'm a doctor of physical medicine and rehabilitation.
My name is Amy Offit, and I'm a doctor of integrative medicine.
It's time to talk about what has happened to us all. We are doctors, seeing what tens of thousands of silenced medical professionals from all over the world have not been able to say.
I think seeing the censorship of these wonderful, super smart doctors, that was scary. To start censoring science, that's a slippery slope. In general, I think we've always trusted the CDC and the FDA, but with this pandemic, it just became questionable to me.
A sad realization progressively that they don't have our best interests in mind, they're not doing their job, they're not acting in the public's well-being. They're captured, they're paid off, they're corrupt.
Well, the group that put that together is called the Global Health Project. One of its founders is Dr. Kat Lindley, and she joins us now. Doctor, great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
What did you guys hope to accomplish with this advertisement? There's multiple versions of the ad. There's an 8-minute version. There's shorter versions. Getting all of these physicians and experts together to say, hey, we're questioning all of these things about COVID. We're questioning what we were told. What did you hope to accomplish by putting this out?
The main goal is to show that even doctors at the beginning of the pandemic, they went with the story, they went with the narrative, they went with the system. As the story unfolded, they started questioning things. We want people to realize that it's okay to question. It's okay to try to do what's best for them and not just follow what they tell us to do. I would say that, you know, we've all seen CDC going one way, then turning it. Rochelle Walensky with her statements, it's safe, it's effective, all of those things. And I think the most important thing is for all of us to question things, not to just buy into the narrative and to do what's best for our families.
You're specifically referring to when CDC Director Walensky testified in Congress, I think it was last April, and we were all like shocked. I mean, our mouths were wide open because she said that mRNA injections marketed as COVID-19 vaccines do not stop the spread of the virus. But of course, that contradicted all of the claims during the pandemic that was urging people to get the vaccines because doing so would reduce the transmission of the virus. And here she is testifying, admitting, no, that's not what they were doing. That's not what they were doing at all. It was an unbelievable moment.
It was, for me, the moment that I knew that we can't really trust what's happening was actually the masks. You know, it was very early on when they said you have to wear the pretty much the spacesuit, you know, the whole gear, and then they ran out of it. It was an N95 mask, then they went to surgical mask. But when CDC said that you have to wear a bandana, that's kind of new when the narrative is falling apart. Because for anyone who spent any time in the hospital, we know exactly how you need to protect yourself against any kind of infectious agents. And when it comes to viruses, these molecules are very, very small. So when they started saying bandana, that's when I knew early on that, you know, whatever comes out of their mouth is not something I would trust. I would have to question it.
Yeah, put a bandana around your face or a T-shirt if you don't have an N95 mask, and that'll stop it. It was ridiculous. So then these doctors started questioning this. They started saying, wait, and they started raising the alarm bells to politicians. They started sounding the alarm. There was a number of doctors, of course, who had long-term alternative treatments that, which had won the Nobel Prize, which had been existent for many, many years, and they were finding great success with that. Dr. Peter McCullough, friend of the show. And then these doctors started raising the alarm bells, and they were silenced. And they were kept quiet. And many of them lost their jobs. They were ostracized. They were banned from social media. Is that part of this agenda to make sure that that never happens again?
It is. We all know that COVID-19 was just a play, right? It was just a rehearsal. We're getting these messages from WHO, from everywhere. There is a new disease that's going to come out. You need to be ready. Silencing physicians, scientists, moms, dads, researchers who are questioning things is never good. The only way we move forward is if you actually have a conversation and find the best way forward. It is very important for all of us to realize that CDC, FDA, NIH, all of these agencies, I would say for the past 3 years, they had their own agenda. And now it's time to have this conversation and say, what do we do forward? What do we do when this happens again? Do we just blindly follow it? And do we go with it? Or do we try to figure out what's best for all of us?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned the WHO, the World Health Organization. It's something we've been following very closely here on the show, the Pandemic Treaty. The largest funder of the WHO, of course, is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. 88% of the funding for the WHO from the philanthropic side comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They've been telling us very publicly that the next pandemic is coming. And Bill Gates specifically has said that it will target children. It's almost as if they know something. You mentioned that this was a play, a rehearsal. COVID was just a play and a rehearsal. And now, as this pandemic treaty moves further and further along, and it appears the United States is going to turn over its sovereignty to the World Health Organization, what can these doctors do? What can the Global Health Alliance, the Global Health Project, do to try to raise awareness about this and stop this? What are you guys doing right now?
So the biggest problem with the IHR amendments and the pandemic treaty or accord or zero draft, as they keep on changing the names, is that if another emergency happens, Director General will have the power to decide how countries respond to these emergencies. So if you look at the IHR amendments, that has to do specifically with vaccine passports, vaccines that we would use, medications, exams, possible border closures and things like that. That has all already played out. We've seen that. In this COVID-19 pandemic, WHO, those used to be recommendations. Now, if this is passed, they're going to become mandates and obligatory things that every country has to follow. What doctors have to do is, first of all, we have to work at restoring the trust that has been lost during these 3 years. Because if you ask someone on the street, you know, you're going to get mixed bag of answers, but a lot of them will say, I'm not sure that I trust my doctors anymore. So the first thing we have to do is restore the trust. We have to remember who our employer is. Our employer is our patient. It's not a corporation. It's not a hospital. It's not this big system. It's not WHO. We need to remember who our employer is. That's the patient. We need to advocate for our patient and on an individual basis decide what's best for our patient. I come from communist country. I don't know if you really know much of my background from Yugoslavia. I know what not having freedom is. And mandates that we had these past 3 years, you know, and now that they're starting to pass, that's not something that any country should allow. That's not something that any physician should go with. Having vaccine mandates, one size fits all, is not the way we were taught medicine. So what we're hoping to do as the Global Health Project is remind physicians that it's okay to question what's happening and to remind them that they took an oath to do no harm. They took an oath to protect our patients. They took an oath to be a voice to our patients. And for the public, what I'm hoping is that they will use these videos and share them, show them to their doctor and say, what did you think when this happened? What would you do now? And will you do what's best for me?
That's powerful. Of course, one of the big problems has been these boards and these hospitals who've fired many of these doctors under pressure. Again, I bring up Dr. Peter McCullough and others just as an example. The ostracization of these medical professionals. So it's one thing for the doctors to stand firm and say, I'm going to do what's best for the patient. But when they have this enormous pressure from the hospital boards or the university boards that are pushing them in some sort of direction, how do you stand up to them?
One of the biggest problems in the United States is that we went from being independent physicians to working for big systems. We started practicing what I call corporate practice of medicine. You have a big hospital, big system who tells you what to do. If you don't comply, you're gonna lose your job. If you don't get the vaccine yourself, you're gonna lose the job. So a lot of people went with this narrative. There comes time in your life when you have to decide, am I doing the right thing or a wrong thing? And I agree with you. The regulatory bodies are a huge deal. Medical boards are a huge deal. But the way you do that, you have to just fight back. You know, your patients will stand with you. When there are issues, they will call the medical board. They will send letters. These medical board, they're appointed by the governors of the state. So I think, you know, it's not going to be easy. It's never easy to do what we're all trying to do, but we have to think what is the future we want to have. Censorship, again, going to back to WHO, there's a huge push for this misinformation, disinformation, as I call the Ministry of Truth. It has to end. We have to expose it. Every day you have to just share a story. Go on Twitter, go on your social media, talk to the barber in the shop. Talk to your taxi driver and tell them what's going on, because you'll find that most people think like you.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right about that. And we're seeing this movement, as we talked about in tonight's show, about throughout Europe, which is this pushback against politicians that have been supporting this globalist agenda, NATO agenda, and lockdown agenda. And so you're seeing this groundswell, I think, and you're seeing it across the United States as well in a lot of different states. So it's my hope that if we get that change at the gubernatorial level, at the governor's level, that we can influence some of these hospitals to allow physicians to do what they do best, to advise and to be able to help their patients. We wish you luck with this campaign, and I would encourage all of you watching right now, share this video. Share this video out on social media. Share our interview here with Dr. Kat Lindley and the clip that we showed you at the beginning. Share that as well. And then share the actual ads that the Global Health Project is putting out as well to try to really drive awareness about this and how these physicians were silenced and lost their jobs in many cases. Dr. Lindley, we appreciate you joining us. Good luck with this project, and thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to all of you for being a part of our show here on Redacted. We really appreciate it. I want to remind all of you here on Rumble to please subscribe. There's a button right there. It's the big red join button. If you'd like to become part of our community, you can do that. And actually, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism and then join us up on Rumble and join our locals community, which is our VIP Rebels community. So we've got some exciting things coming out. We're going to be doing members-only live streams, which are starting, I believe, next week. We're going to be doing those just for members exclusively. We'll also be having a Natalie's Book Club, which is going to be a part of that as well. And we're going to have exclusive videos and content just for our Redacted Rebels community. But it's also just a way for you to support this show. You know, we're not backed by billionaires. We don't take money from Pfizer. We don't take money from any of these big corporations. We're not bought and sold by CNN or Rupert Murdoch or anybody like that. So we're supported by you. So again, if you want to support us, you can. You don't have to. It's totally free. But if you want to come over and become a Redacted Rebel VIP for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can do that. And I just want to say thanks to all of you for watching. This week, we had a lot of great guests, a lot of really interesting interviews, a lot of excellent journalists, and it's really thanks to you guys because you're able to share this show, you're able to push it out on social media to get the word out about independent journalism, and I just want to say thank you. It really means a lot to us here at Redacted. So have a great weekend, everyone. We will be back here on Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Until then, have a great night, everyone.